The name of the police officer in the photograph was Richard Middleton. Everyone called him Dick. His best friend on the force was Bobby Hayes. Big guy. Lives near a golf course outside Birmingham. Must be in his 80s by now. Hayes and Middleton started as police officers in Birmingham right at the moment when the civil rights movement was asserting itself. The police department was all white and all male back then, but in the streets, the balance of power was shifting. When integration came to the Birmingham school system, Hayes remembers it as bewildering.
If you were a cop, nobody really liked you because we were carrying the black kids in the school. That's what we were ordered to do, and they were going to get in. That's just the way it was. We had no choice. The black people didn't like you because you were a policeman. The white people didn't like you because you're protecting the black kids and carrying them in where the crowd, the goofies, didn't want them to go.
In 1963, King's protest campaign was headquartered in 16th Street Baptist Church, which is an old red brick building on the northwest corner of Kelly Ingram Park. The protesters would come out in the late afternoon, march around the park on their way downtown. They were trained in nonviolence, marched according to a strict schedule. It was a military operation. Crowds of people would gather to see the spectacle. The police were supposed to keep the protesters and the crowd apart. The protests get bigger and bigger. The crowds get bigger and bigger. It's late spring, so it's starting to get really hot. The police chief, Bull Connor, starts locking up everyone he can. Then Connor says, to hell with it, bring in the dogs.
Of course, there's a lot of noise, a lot of tension in the air, a lot of people yelling and screaming. Bricks started coming in, you know, throwing bricks. It got to be a really ugly sight real quick.
Dick Middleton, the cop in the photo, was a member of the city's canine unit. He had a German shepherd named Leo. He and the other members of the tactical unit were posted behind a barricade, a row of wooden sawhorses running parallel to the curb. There's a line of cops and dogs in a kind of no man's land between the bystanders and the protesters.
He was inside the barricade. The crowd was on the other side. And they were taunting the police. And of course, all we could do is just stand at the police. All they could do was just stand there at that time. Dick was well back. The way he told me, he was 10 yards maybe back of the barricades. And the guy came around the barricade.
So here we have a foot soldier in the middle of all the mayhem, cutting through the no man's land towards the sidewalk. And Middleton's German shepherd Leo lunges at him. That's the moment Bill Hudson captures in his famous photograph and Ron McDowell captures in his statue. The confrontation between the innocent foot soldier and the snarling face of racial oppression. Bill Hudson's editor says later that he picked that particular photo out of the many taken that day because he was riveted by the saintly calm of the young man in the snarling jaws of the German Shepherd. Here's where the story starts to get complicated.
This is an interview today, Saturday, May 25th, 1996, at the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, with Mr. Walter Gaston of Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, how did you get involved in the civil rights movement?
Now, that's one thing that I always had a problem with. I never did get involved with the civil rights movement.
Walter Gaston is the boy in the photograph, the one bitten by Leo. He's a mysterious figure. He was interviewed at the time of the photograph by Jet Magazine, back in 1963, but only briefly. From time to time, other people have come forward to say that they were the one in the photograph, not Gaston, but those claims seem dubious. Meanwhile, Gaston disappears. People try and find him and can't. All that seems to exist is this oral history that you're hearing, done in honor of the unveiling of Ron McDowell's statue. And the interview is strange because it doesn't go the way the interviewer thinks it's going to go. She starts with the obvious question. you were a foot soldier. Tell me how that came about. And he says, I wasn't a foot soldier.
But the fact is, the day of that movement, I was supposed to have been in school. But a friend of mine, acquaintance of mine, had told me that earlier that Martin Luther King was in town that day and that he was going to be there. And I said I wanted to be there too. I wanted to come and find out what it was all about.
Walter Gadsden is a bystander. The famous statue in Kelly Ingram Park, Foot Soldier, is not, in fact, of a foot soldier. It gets stranger.
Okay, and when you left school, where did you come downtown?
To the park area, okay. The Kelly Ingram Park over there. So we started walking toward the activity, and as I approached and got closer, they turned and looked at me, and I saw them coming toward me, so I turned to leave.
He was walking down the street with the protesters coming towards him, so he veers off to get out of their way and rejoin the spectators on the sidewalk, ducks in behind the row of sawhorses, where he runs into Officer Middleton and Leo.
So as I turned and started to walk away, I was grabbed, and the rest of it.
Grabbed by the policeman
and yanked toward him.
Is that when the dog bit you? Did the dog bite you?
As near as I can remember, that happened simultaneously.
Did you?
The policeman grabbed me, I don't remember what hand, but the dog, he grabbed me with one hand. It happened so fast, there was nothing I could do except throw up a leg and try to protect myself. And as I was doing that, there I went.
Yeah.
If you look at the famous photo, Gadsden's explanation makes sense. Leo is lunging. The bite is a millisecond away. But Gadsden and Middleton just look startled, the way people do if they unexpectedly bump into each other. Gadsden has his knee up as a reflex and his hand on Middleton as if to steady himself. Middleton has one hand on Gadsden and his other arm is flexed. He's yanking back on the leash. Leo has freaked out and he's trying to restrain him. Leo, whoa! Middleton's colleague Bobby Hayes made the same point to me. Middleton's not letting Leo loose on Gadsden. Quite the opposite.
If you look at the picture, you can tell he's holding the dog back. The line's taut. The dog's feet are in the air, the best I recall. And Dick's got him here. He's holding that line. He's not going to let him bite that guy.
Now, what does Gadsden say about all this? Does he think he's been the victim of police brutality? Not at all. In fact, he can't seem to understand why everyone makes such a big deal out of what happened to him that day.
How did your family members react to your participation?
Well, they were angry because I didn't attend school that day.
Okay.
He appears in an image that transfixed the world, and his parents are mad that he skipped school. The interviewer then tries to get at Gadsden's connections to the struggle for civil rights.
Okay, well, the church where your parents or your family members were attending, were they involved in the civil rights movement during that time, do you know?
They never told me of it.
Okay. What benefits do you, your family, and the community realize as a result of that movement?
None.
In answer to the question, what benefits did your family receive from the civil rights movement, he answers, none. He's not having any of it. Gadsden's interview, in fact, just gets weirder.
Okay, if you were in control of an organization or a movement of such and could go back and change some things, what would you change?
Okay, the things that I would change would be a more careful choice of people involved in all of those movements. There are too many, to be just blunt, crooked people. Many of the people that were involved and had notoriety became too crooked.
The most famous photograph of the civil rights movement is of a startled cop trying desperately to hold his dog back from biting a bystander who wasn't that much of a fan of the civil rights movement.
I'm wondering still, why me? Because I've never had any notoriety whatsoever concerning that picture. That picture was in the paper, but many other people were too.
Yes.
Many other situations. Buses, bombings.
Yes. But they chose to use the little boy at 15 for that statue.
The little boy in age, but not the little boy in size.
Were you surprised when you found out about it?
I was totally flabbergasted. I didn't know what to think.
And Gadsden's main objection? He's light-skinned. He says the statue makes him look dark-skinned.
That statue doesn't look like me. It looks like a totally different boy. That looks like an African boy.
That's what you feel about it? It looks like an African boy?
It looks like an African boy.
The color or the features?
The features. The lips, the size. You take a look at the picture there and the statue there, the boy is short. I was tall for my age.
If you listen to the whole interview, it nearly goes off the rails at this point. The interviewer expected to find a heroic civil rights veteran. Instead, she's getting a grumpy old man still wedded to some of the oldest and most awkward of black prejudices.